CBSI in the world. I'm John Dutcher with Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. We're joined by Michael Knight, the Jill and Jay Bernstein Fellow of the Washington Institute, specializing in military security. And we now enter into the fog of war, Ahrar Sinjar. Mike, a very good evening to you. What is Ahrar Sinjar, and how does it affect the whole of the Mesopotamia area? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, Ahrar Sinjar is a new group that has turned up and has started to fire rockets at Kurdistan region of Iraq, our friends the Kurds, and also at Turkish military bases in the Kurdistan region of Iraq. And so the question we've been looking at is, who are these guys really? And how did they suddenly jump up and start firing rockets and drones at people? The answer is that the Yazidi people were, they live in a place called Sinjar, which is west of Mosul. So if you imagine it's between the city of Mosul, which Islamic State held in up till 2017, and eastern Syria. And between the two places is a mountain called Sinjar. And some of your listeners will remember the early stages of the Islamic State takeover in Iraq. They took many thousands of Yazidis hostage and sold many of the women into sex slavery, took the children away and killed the men en masse. So the Yazidis suffered greatly. And when the Islamic State was thrown out of their areas, they obviously sided with the people who helped them the most. And that was the Turkish rebel group PKK. And that was also the Iran-backed militias called the Hashid al-Shabi. And what we're now seeing is a strange witch's brew of when you mix some of those Yazidis together with this anti-Turkish terrorist group with, these Iranian-backed militias.
So the Yazidis, are they guns for hire, or have they converted in some fashion? Because Yazidis follow a different spiritual center.
Yeah, that's correct. The Yazidis are one of the micro minorities in Iraq that are not Muslim, not Christian. They're also very specific to this individual area of Iraq. And no, they're not guns for hire overall, but they are angry at the Turks in particular, because the Turks say, you Yazidis have got too close to the anti-Turkish PKK terrorist movement, so we're going to start bombing you. And that's what's been happening recently. And that has sort of pushed some of the hardline Yazidis more into the pro-Iranian and pro-PKK camp. And now they're being used to go hit our friends, the Iraqi Kurds, and also to hit Turkish military bases in northern Iraq.
Malcolm?
Although the Turks did ally themselves with the anti-ISIS forces, but now are Yazidis joining the PKK as well? It's just a side question. Also, how widespread is the practice of the Shiite Iran-backed terror groups creating these what they call shell versions of themselves to escape accountability for what they've done?
Yeah. So, first of all, the Yazidis, because they're desperate, for protection, have been working with the anti-Turkish PKK right the way back to the ISIS takeover of the Sinjar area in 2014. The PKK were the first people to come and help the Yazidis. They were right next door in Syria. They came over the border and they helped the Yazidis to defend a last safe haven on top of Jebel Sinjar, the mountain there. That's where the Iraqis were flying in supplies in 2014 for the starving people. That's where the Americans sent Marines to go and make sure that the Yazidis could hold the mountain. So that was really the first time the U.S. forces became involved in that 2014 war. And, the people that we found up on the mountain protecting the Yazidis were the PKK. So it's no surprise that Yazidis would develop a fondness for the PKK, who helped to protect them when nobody else was. Nowadays, what we're seeing is the Iran-backed militias are finding any small group of people who have historically wanted their own self-protection force, like the Yazidis or other micro-minorities, Turkmen, Shabak, Christians in Iraq, Kakai, and they are saying, well, if you want to have your own small militia, we have an umbrella movement and you can finally have that ethnic or sectarian militia that you've needed all these years under our umbrella. But the catch is, occasionally we and our Iranian masters will ask you to do something, do a favor for us. And this is a dangerous formula that we're seeing all across Iraq at the moment, and also Syria and even Yemen in some places.
I want to understand how this is happening in the state of Iraq. Does Baghdad know about it? Is this a demonstration of the fragmentation of Iraq?
Well, in 2014, at the same time as that ISIS invasion, the Iraqi military suffered severe defeat and lost six whole divisions, about a quarter of its armed forces in one go. And what they did was they raised a national militia called the Popular Mobilization Forces. And that is a jack-in-the-box that's very difficult to get back in the box. Now it's become a way for local communities to raise their own militias, as long as they're willing to do that within an Iranian-dominated militia structure. So yes, Iraq knows about it, but almost in the same way that Hezbollah grew within the Lebanese environment, this has grown within the Iraqi environment, with the difference being that, you know, this is actually paid for by the Iraqi government because it's nominally a national security force, but it's actually under the skin run by Iran and and recruiting across all of these micro minorities.
I want to understand this. So the Baghdad government knows about this, knows Iran is recruiting disaffected elements in Iraq, and this suits the purposes of Baghdad, or is it incapable of responding in any forceful fashion? Is it subdued by Tehran?
The militias inside Iraq are like a parasite now that has attached itself to the gut of the country and is able to siphon off $2 to $3 billion a year in payments. So, you know, Iraq finds itself with a very difficult to get rid of parasite that is more than capable of defending itself, has a big friend in Iran, and now has, 150,000, 170,000 people on the payroll, which is, when you times that by a family size, that means, around 1 million Iraqis are drawing their livelihood from this.
Malcolm?
Well, the Turkey increasingly encroaching on the region to secure oil pipelines, and they're fighting PKK. Does this set us up for a confrontation then between Iran and its agents and Turkey and its interests in the region? Could we see a real flare-up between them?
Yes, and that's what's so interesting about this, is that for the first time, really, we see Iran-backed militias and Turkey going at each other, seemingly with the intent to kill. Now, the Turks have certainly killed a bunch of Iran-backed militia players in the last month, three or four retaliatory strikes the Turks have done, and they aimed to kill, and they did kill in some cases. The Iran-backed militias, we're not sure if they're aiming to kill at the moment. They are using much more drones, and oddly enough, even though you're using a more advanced weapon system, the Iran-backed militias often use drones to ensure precise results, for instance, not accidentally killing a Turkish soldier. But they are hitting Turkish bases harder and harder every month, and the Turks seem to be not really tolerating that in the same way that, for instance, the US tolerates aim-to-miss attacks. The Turks don't seem to be tolerating it. We'll see if they hit back even harder in the next couple of weeks, or if they, like the US, decide, well, I guess if these attacks are not meant to kill us, we can live with them.
And the Yazidis who emigrated to Europe, you mentioned this, Mike, about how they were badly abused and felt abandoned. Are these activities in Iraq okay with the diaspora that sought refuge and in many instances came to America, is my memory of a couple of years back?
No, I think these militant actions recruited by Iran, these small groups, represent a real hard line for a Yazidi independence movement,
right,
that want to self-govern within Iraq. But most Yazidis in Iraq and, overwhelming majority outside Iraq probably see these activities as dangerous and maybe reducing sympathy for them.
Michael Knights is the Jill and Jay Bernstein Fellow of the Washington Institute, Malcolm Hohnlein Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.